This is a No Dogma podcast. I am Brian Hogan, and tonight I'm joined by Rachel Appel, a content developer for ASP.NET team at Microsoft. Thanks for joining me, Rachel.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
To start off, can you tell me a little bit about who you are?
Well, I'm a content developer for Microsoft, so that means that I write a lot of the things that programmers would use when they are getting into our technologies. So some of our main properties out there, like 3dubs.asp.net and MSDN, docs.microsoft.com, I create a lot of the web development content that goes on those sites, as well as giving talks and other work in the community.
Would you see yourself as a trainer and as an instructor, or as a developer as well?
A little of both. You have to do a bit of both. We have to be able to develop. But in a larger sense, we're teaching people through either writing or speaking.
And this you do remotely, I think.
Yes.
So are most of your colleagues based in Seattle?
It's a mixed team. We have a handful of people in Seattle. We have myself, where I'm normally based out of the East Coast, but I go to a lot of different places and I just kind of hang out and work. Another teammate's in Germany. One goes between Seattle and Hawaii, one's in Arizona. So we're kind of spread out a bit.
Tonight, we're going to primarily talk about accessibility in relation to websites. But before we get to that, you are the second of the Rachel I've interviewed. The first was Rachel Rees. So for people who haven't heard about it, what's the story with the Rachel?
We're a group of software developers that happen to all be named Rachel. We just kind of gravitated toward each other and I guess formed ourselves a little club, and the requirement being that your software developer named Rachel you get in. We make jokes about Rachel being the most popular female developer name and Scott being the most popular male developer name. So you have Scott Hanselman and Scott Guthrie and all those other Scots out there. So that's what we are.
It started with three, but I've heard you've expanded to four now, four Rachel.
Yeah, we're up to four.
Is there room for a fifth?
Maybe. We can barely keep track of ourselves the way it is.
Look, so I'll leave that there. You've a very strong background in accessibility. You write about it in your blog. But what does it even mean to say accessibility in relation to websites?
As far as websites and software goes, when we talk about accessibility, it usually means taking into account more than just your typical able-bodied user, or what you would think of as an average user. Would be considering all the other people out there, and there's a good like 20% of the population that's considered disabled in some form. And when I give talks about this, I usually stand all by myself out on the stage and I'll say, I'm using some sort of assistive technology right now for disabled people. What is it? And people are looking and they're thinking, oh, she's not in a wheelchair or anything like this. But then I take off my glasses and hold them up and they all groan. I'll point out, you know, most of the room has glasses on. A lot of us are using some sort of, you know, assistive technology because you're technically considered disabled, right? I don't have 20/20 vision. I'm nearsighted. So that's it. Eyesight is just one of the things that we would code for or design for accessibility. Some other major areas are auditory disabilities, cognitive, and motor skills. So motor skills is also a kind of a big one. There's a lot of folks who can't use keyboards and mice, which are the, you know, the vast majority of input devices. More now with touchscreen, we get to do fingers and pens and things like that. But there are folks that need completely different devices that are, you just don't go into Best Buy and pick them up on a Sunday. Things like a Puffin SIP switch, Braille readers, all kind of devices, single access, which is things for people who have, you know, maybe severe diseases or things that have really hindered them from being able to use their motor skills like we would consider an average person to be able to.
Could you just explain a couple of those things? A single access switch, the Puffin, I think.
Sure.
I've not heard of any of those.
Yeah. So if you do a web search and you look for like disability devices or accessibility devices, depending on which, say, diseases or physical impediments people might have, they might need, say, something like Stephen Hawking would use a puff and sip switch. He is very limited. I forget the actual name of the disease he has. I think it's ALS or MS. I forget exactly, but he's limited. He can't move. He has no motor skills. So he has to. I think he's actually maybe blinks at this point, has one of those interfaces. But at one point he would do like sipping and puffing through a straw, and that converts to input that the computer can use. So those who are very severely disabled through disease or accident might need to use those kind of devices. They just can't pick up a mouse or a keyboard like the rest of us.
And then when we get to the likes of standards, are there set standards that are out there from the W3, or are there governmental standards, state standards?
There are. There's both, actually. So W3 has a set of standards. And you can go look up an organization called WebAIM. And WebAIM actually has a lot of links and good information on their site. It's the Accessibility Initiative. And what that does is it tells you, if you're building a site or software that has a user interface, what kind of things can you do to make that software more amenable to get as close to 100% of your users covered so that they can all easily use your software, as opposed to, you know, forgetting up to 20% of the population, which is a lot of users, right? And when you cover the various forms of disability. So you can go to webaim.org. And you could plunk in a URL. You could even download a little kit that they have. Either way, so you plunk in the URL to test it out, and it'll scan that URL and tell you exactly what you could do to fix the problem. And usually, it's very easy stuff. It's not like you're going to take weeks or even days of modifications. We're talking minutes. Usually, things like just upping the font size to an actual readable font for old people like myself. Is, you know, with glasses, is kind of an important thing. Anymore, the fonts are just so tiny. And I end up having the zoom set at 150% on the browser most of the time. It's not getting any smaller either, you know. I'm not the only one, right? There's a whole baby boomer generation out there that's doing this as well. Then other things like the contrast. There's a lot of people who are colorblind, and they use the internet too. And then we'll have folks putting red and green and blue buttons, which happen to be the type of color blindness that you have. If you want to, the scanner at webaim.org will scan for the contrast and colorblind errors. But there's also a separate tool called Color Oracle you can download. And what it will do is it'll show the whole screen, your whole computer screen, as it would look to somebody with one of the types of color blindness. So you can use either WebAIM's tools, or you can also use Color Oracle just to see what's going on. Maybe if you're doing a mobile client instead of a web client. But those will help you. And of course, you know, you want to watch when you have red, green, and blue on your pages. Actually, that's why Facebook is blue, the color that it is. And because Mark Zuckerberg is colorblind, and he could see that color blue, but he can't see some of the other colors correctly.
If you're a developer working on, let's say, a state or a government website, are these standards imposed, or are they still just, hey, it'd be nice if you did?
No, they're imposed because it's government. And I believe it's 503... it's called like Article 503, if I'm getting the number
correctly. I remember that number in relation to something to do with accessibility in the past.
So you definitely have to have everything according to the standards. And so some of the things would be like making sure the font's big enough, making sure you have good contrast, anything that the scanner can check for at WebAIM. But also things for the government like making sure that, here's a big one, that websites work with screen readers, screen narrators. And I tell people, just go, there's some free screen narrators. One is called NVDA, and you could just download that for free. Put a blindfold on yourself and run it and see how far you get. Just do it for, you know, a day. Exhaust yourself doing it for a day. See how far you get. And then you'll really come out thinking, you know, differently. And there's also at WebAIM a little video of a blind person actually using a screen narrator. Things that we do is we tend to not use what are called skip links. Skip links allow screen readers to skip over a section that's otherwise annoying, like a menu or an ad section. So if you don't have these skip links on your site, that, you know, somebody who's blind or has low vision has to sit there while the reader goes through reading all of that stuff over and over again. So you're talking hours they waste every day just trying to get through menus. And then, you know, they might bump the mouse and then some JavaScript will run and it'll reset it and it'll have to do it again for the same page. Very annoying, some of the things people do on their web pages that just make them utterly not even usable, which I find highly ironic. Advertisers will pay good money to have ads on these pages, and those same ads make the site unusable. So users that are blind maybe go to that site, they can't use it, and they know so within seconds, and then they shut it down and never go back again. And that advertiser loses out, and so does the site, and they don't even know it.
Is a skip link just a standard HTML tag that I haven't heard of?
No, actually, well, yeah, yes and no. Just anchor tags and the little anchor with the hash where you make a reference to another anchor. It's just a technique using those. So standard tags, and then just a technique for hiding that little div or span that you put them in. So really easy, and it takes maybe 2 minutes just to add these into an existing page that you have. And if it's in, say, like a master page or some kind of included page, you know, you're talking a 3 minute change that has real serious value for a certain segment of your users. So it's certainly worth it.
I know you've pretty much answered the question of why I should make my site accessible, but you'll often have people just saying, look, it's so much work just getting a site working well in Firefox, Chrome, IE, Edge, Opera, whatever else. This is just sort of, I'm not going to bother.
Yeah, well, there's two things about that. That's true. People, they wrongly assume that there's all kind of effort involved here. It's really not. I'm talking anchor tags here, adjusting the font. These are, you know, changes that take 30 seconds in some cases, and often just one modification to a CSS file. So when you're in there refactoring, you could just, you know, quickly, you know, add in a skip link or up the font or check the contrast. Another part is that it should be part of your design. So what I say by part of the design is, you know, as we're actually building the site or working with making it better, if we actually design with accessibility first, we're going to find out actually that if it can help people who have challenges and difficulties that are much greater than the average user, then how, what do you think it's going to help the average user? Of course it is. And it does. So we find out that software that's built with accessibility in mind first helps the average user that does not have an accessibility issue just as much as it does, in some cases, the disabled user.
That's very interesting.
Especially with things like the minimalist and mobile designs, because often mobile-first design is very good for accessible users because you have limited user interfaces and you don't need the precision mousing or things like that. So there's less data. So the design helps for everybody.
So that would suggest that sites in general are bad. And they could all do with being accessible.
But that's true, actually. Sites in general are often designed pretty badly. And, you know, I'm just going to squarely point the finger at ads here. Ads are a big part of the problem. Nobody likes them. We know, though, that they're an evil necessity because that's where the money comes from to sponsor these sites, to even be up and running. But you don't have to cram ads down people's throats. You don't have to run JavaScript that runs screen narrators right off of the screen and makes them unusable. We can deliver ads in a way, you know, that helps people be able to consume the content and actually get to see your ad as well. But people tend to forget that, and they just kind of run off the world with doing whatever looks trendy at the time, you know, like pop-up ads and things like that.
There is a bit of a move towards, I think they're called non-intrusive ads. I have a friend who runs a company called PageFair. They are producing the non-intrusive. It's a single piece of text. You can say, I don't want to see it anymore. And they provide information to the likes of Adblock and uBlock Origin, saying, here's our latest string that you can block if you want. Or if a person says, allow non-intrusive ads, they come true.
Right.
Would something like non-intrusive advertising on, let's say, sites for people with disabilities be far, far better? Would that be a good approach?
I've never personally seen that yet, but it sounds like it would be a very good approach. I run ad blockers myself because they just get so annoying. And if a site tells you that you have to turn the ad blocker on, I tell them to go pound sand. Basically, I just don't go, Forbes, sorry, I'm not reading your stuff anymore. Because, nope, you demand me to put that, turn that on, and I don't want to. All right. So, and now I'm just sticking it to them at this point. So there comes the point where you just got to stick it to them. But yeah, I would say things like that, because pop-up ads are a serious issue with that. First of all, even me just being like, you know, average user with glasses, as I get older, the precision mousing is not as good with my hands anymore. A little bit of carpal tunnel going too. So when you have this tiny, tiny X that I'm not entirely convinced isn't so tiny on purpose so that you can't click it and get rid of a pop-up window. They're so tiny and it's hard for you to get to it, and you're clicking everywhere else and popping up more ads. It's just kind of ridiculous. That's no good for anybody. That's me, somebody who works with a mouse all day, every day, right? What is it for people who don't and have some sort of, you know, ability challenge as well?
It sounds like, you can, with a relatively small amount of effort, make your site much more accessible for a certain percentage of people, maybe those
right.
with sight difficulties. But we were talking about there are 20% of the population with somewhere between a minor disability and a major disability. What's a reasonable percentage that you could achieve without compromising the aesthetics or having to put in far too much engineering?
Right. Well, I would say you should be able to get close to that 20%. A large portion is visual. So things like the contrast, the font, and colorblind goes pretty far. For those with auditory issues, mostly that is in the realm of providing transcripts if you have video and captioning, that sort of thing. And multiple play speeds if they need to play a little bit slower to be able to hear better. So that's kind of a light area. It's kind of the blending of the accessibility devices and the website software. Now, in general, the devices are going to work at the hardware level through the computer. There are a few things you can do to help, like skip links or some other things like that. So those things, I think, is where the most effort is. And the effort is still, again, it's not a whole lot of effort. It's just that you do have to modify some code. Like one of the things that they have are called ARIA tags or ARIA elements. And it basically just directs the screen reader, a screen narrator, where to go, or any kind of accessibility devices, what they should do when they encounter this tag. You know, should you read off this particular text or skip it or do something else? So it's usually a really good bang for the buck, and you should be able to get close to that 20%, because it does encompass everybody from motor skills and cognitive development issues to the sight and the hearing. And then just for cognitive, for the last piece is more, not even a programmer's deal. If you're a writer like myself, it's about writing clearly not using gratuitous big words just because you like to sound, you know, inflated and important. Nice clear sections. You don't need to put War and Peace in every, you know, technical reference or every blog post. You know, just short, sweet, to the point, clear, crisp writing. And that's easy to scan if you're, you know, writing actual documentation or a story or something. So that helps with those who have something like maybe ADD or some kind of a cognitive issue, which is much more about the content than it is the programming on that side. So the other stuff is what we take care of as programmers generally.
If someone listening to this podcast happens to go, my God, that's a revelation. I need to do this.
Well, they do.
But let's just say for reasons of legacy software or cost, they can't do it. Are there any add-ons that help with this? You could just say, here, download this thing and my site will be 10 times better for you.
Yeah, I would say go to webaim.org and then just plunk in your URLs into the scanner and see what comes up. A lot of it is tiny changes that you can make in a few seconds or even a few minutes. And that should not, it's all HTML, so it should not affect anything. You should be able to do it and make the change pretty easily.
If I'm just a commercial website owner, I'm not doing anything government or, let's say, state or federal related, do I have to make my site accessible, or is it just up to me?
It's generally just up to you. Now, if you're, I think Europe, the European Union may have some different rules about that for business websites. But here in the States, at least, no, really, there's, you know, no regulations on any of that sort of thing. But I would suggest, you know, going with an accessible first design.
Is this all applied to the newfangled technologies, the wonderful JavaScript, single page apps, whatever's coming next? Is this sort of on the roadmap for all new web frameworks that they need to have accessibility built in? Or is it possible that I'm going to choose something because it's new and cool and I just won't be able to make it accessible?
Well, you should still be able to make it accessible, but I'm going to go with the latter, is that people are just going to go with the new cool stuff. But you could still, even if it's a single page app, if it has HTML as its base, most of the accessibility things that you do are just techniques and a few actual ARIA elements. But that's just cramming those into existing HTML elements anyway. So, to kind of fit in there nicely already.
I was going to ask you a question, a very specific one of how do you make it accessible? But we've kind of spoken about WebAIM, getting it tested, putting in certain tags, putting in your anchors, your skip links, your areas. What other things, contrast, what are the other things that you could do to make it accessible?
If you're working with forms, because everybody has forms, if you the label tag, instead of just doing a span and putting a label, actually use the label tag. Screen narrators know that that's the label and what it's for. Use the field set to be able to group fields. Also, of course, just visual logical groupings that make sense, of course. Just don't randomly place your fields. Developers try to get away with that sometimes. Just whatever the framework spits out, we'll go with. So things like that with the HTML forms could help. Oh, also, for validation, we have a lot of JavaScript validation. None of these little JavaScript pop-ups, they're kind of annoying. They're annoying to everybody. It doesn't matter where you are on the ability spectrum, right? Nobody likes those. But you have the little inline red error message. Number one, red, you might want, don't rely just on the color. Make sure it clearly says that it's an error message and which field needs to be fixed, right? So put it close to the field or somewhere that it's very clear what it is talking about. Error messages pop up on the other side of a page, not near the field. And then people, you know, it's not always clear what you're talking about in the error message, especially in complicated fields. So those kind of things will help when you're doing fields. Just watch colors as any kind of notation. Make sure there's text as well. I mean, you could still use colors. that's fine, but make sure there's text for people who can't identify that color, right? And that it's clear what the button does or what the error message is as well. So you have that alternate. Make sure there's always keyboard alternates too, to mousing activities. And go through things with the screen reader and make sure that it can narrate your page and you can tell what it's talking about.
Captures are something that I sometimes find quite challenging. I presume they'd be a big no-no if you wanted your site to be accessible.
What was that? Captures?
Captures, yeah.
Oh, captures. Huh, yeah, those are difficult. Those are difficult for your average developer or user, right? Half the time, I actually just saw one. I think this is the only one ever in my lifetime. What site was it? It was on a telecom site, no less. And they popped up a caption. You can actually legibly read all of the numbers in it. And I thought, oh, this is crazy. Because you can never actually tell, you know, is that caps? Is it, you know, you can't really tell what the letters and numbers are. They distort them so much. But that's also why they have to do it. So it's a catch 22. So yeah, captures are like a great security idea, but not so much a usability idea. And actually, I think I've heard somewhere that they're not that great of a security idea either, but I can't, don't quote me on that.
So. I tried using the audio alternative once because I just couldn't make out the text. I really had no idea what it was. So distorted. There was intentional background noise.
Right.
And
Same thing.
I think they were telling me to listen to numbers. I had not a clue. I had to just go back and try the text again until I got in.
Yeah. And consider, you know, if you consider yourself like an average able-bodied user and it's that difficult for you, how difficult is it for somebody with a challenge, a sight challenge or a hearing challenge with background noise or visual distortions and things like that? It's amazing that people get to use certain sites at all.
If, let's just say I'm a small website owner, like a mom and pop shop or something, and I don't have access to developers anymore. I hired someone, they did it for me. How or where can I find help, or who is a good person to hire to make a site accessible? Is there some sort of professional standard you should look for? Is there an association of developers that do this thing?
There are, if you look at WebAIM, it tends to have some resources, but you can also go out on the web and look for A11Y, and that's shortened the word accessibility, A, then 11 letters, then the letter Y. So it's a nice little truncation, and that'll bring up the accessibility community, and there's a lot of consultants. A lot of them are out on Twitter and whatnot, or you can even go find me out online. I should know where some people are to be able to, you know, hook you up. We have some accessibility experts inside of Microsoft as well that do this, and they're just not necessarily out in the public as much as I am.
If a person wanted to know more about this, Rachel, obviously there's your website. Can you tell me where that is and what other resources you'd recommend for developers or individuals interested?
Sure. You can go to rachelappel.com. That's my website. And also webaim.org, webaim.org.
I'll put in links to both of those things. You blog on this quite frequently as well, don't you?
Yes.
Do you stick with very heavily on the tech side, or are you more of an evangelist for people to do this?
A little of both.
Well, I think we'll call it a night there. Thank you very much for your time, Rachel Appel.
Thanks, Brian, for having me.
Thank you. The opening music was a return by Nisi 23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Take a Look Around You by Kai Angel from the album Better Way.